One thing I think that can change your life is to start actually doing the things that you promised to yourself that you said you would do. How many of us like, oh, I'm going to go to bed earlier tonight. I'm going to exercise tomorrow. I'm going to, you know, tell the people I love that I love them, you know, these things. So, you know, right now you're listening, you're going to procrastinate later, write down those promises that are important to you. And for the next week, hold every one of those promises and be good for it, because these aren't just for other people. But if we can't trust ourselves to complete these important things in our lives, then we don't have a stable ground to stand on.
So, first of all, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I don't want to bury the lead for anyone. The woman sitting across from me in the virtual chair ran 200 ultra marathons in 200 days. And as somebody who's new to running and running my first marathon, I understand how difficult that may seem. And I'm really honored to have you here today and really grateful for you joining me. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk to you today.
When did you believe that that accomplishment was first possible?
I think that there is a requirement to some degree when you start a big endeavor that you think it's possible even before you start. But when I decided to start, and I had to look back to the Guinness World Record application to see what number I even put in initially that I thought I would do. And I had put in that I was going to do 100 ultras in 100 days. So my perception of what was the right number changed drastically throughout it. But yeah, I think that, you know, before I started, I knew it was possible. I just didn't know if I would be able to do it, you know, would my body hold up? And it was those questions that really propelled me and interested me and kept me going the whole way. Curiosity.
Yeah. Well, it was funny because when I was looking at a previous podcast, you said something that really stuck out to me, which was on around day 30, you were dealing with some pain and you felt like you were breaking through instead of breaking.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. Well, every single day that I ran from day one, probably until I started getting close to 100 ultras, I just knew that something little could stop me. And so I think it was right around day 15, 16, 17, I started to get really intense shin pain, and like pulling a sock on would be painful. You know, and we're talking about this, the littlest, tiniest pressure on that area was painful. So you can imagine running was awful. And I told myself, I'm not going to destroy my body for this record, but I want to see how far I can go and I can actually adapt to what I'm doing. And having not trained for it really specifically, just kind of jumping into it, I knew there was going to be a little bit of time where things were going to really hurt. So it got so bad within that like 15 to like day 15 to day, like probably 26 or 27, that when the pain started to dissipate close to a month in, I realized, wow, I can have the most intense pain and my body will still adapt and not break. And it was just this huge realization to me that I could actually run through something that felt like a really serious injury and then have no pain in my shins whatsoever.
That's wild. It just speaks to the body's ability to heal and adapt. And I can't help but also notice that, like, I feel like your mind played some role in that. Like, how do you think your mind has healed your pain and allowed you to go to these lengths, specifically as it relates to injuries?
Well, I think if you really want something and it's really important to you, and this record was really important to me, not just breaking the world record, which at the time was 22 days, I was pretty confident I could break 22 days, but I wanted to set a number that for ultra runners felt big, you know, and that ended up being 200. And so I wanted it so bad that I just think that, you know, my body found a way, and I'm not sure how it did. But every day was a new start and a new opportunity to break or break through. Like you said, I'm either going to break today or I'm going to break through. And it was a conscious choice to keep putting one foot in front of the other, no matter what the circumstances. I mean, despite, like, one of the challenges was the pain, right? So getting through the pain to a place where I could run pain-free with joy and have a good time. But there were also, I was running through the winter in Colorado. So I would wake up and there'd be 12 inches of snow on the ground. So there would be a part of me that would be like, oh no, you know, just, you know, be so like, ah, and then nope, reframe it, let's go. And so I learned to feel my emotions, but to not take them too seriously, to let them come and go. So if I'm freaking out and I'm scared to go out in the conditions, maybe it's negative 15 Fahrenheit, I had to like put that away and still keep taking those steps forward.
Okay, so that's a really important point that you just said that I think stops a lot of people, is that they see the snow on the ground and they start procrastinating. And sometimes that procrastination lasts a day, a week, a month, a year, decade. But you're able to flip the switch like that immediately in that moment. How?
How? You know, I thought about this a lot during the runs. Why can I keep getting out every day? And for me, it came down to, I mean, the most simple thing, and it sounds so like you either have it or you don't. I love running and I love being outside. And so when I would have a tough day, it would be like, well, what better thing could I be doing anyway? I could go inside and, you know, work on the computer, or I could go, you know, drive around. I mean, what would I rather be doing? And at the end of the day, I wanted to be doing what I was doing, no matter how hard it was. And it built on itself. And the more days that I put in, the more power every day had to build upon that. So it's like if you're building a house, right? At first, it looks like nothing. And before you know it, there's the bones are up, and then you have siding, and you can see as you get further in and you build that momentum, you can kind of see what it's going to look like, and it gets you excited. So I think that as I built up, you know, I got through 30 days and then I got through 50, and I was like, wow, 50 days is a lot. I kept hitting these points too, at which, you know, on social media, I was trying to just be really transparent and open and share every day. And I thought that was an important part of setting the world record. And so I would have people tell me, oh, so-and-so did 30 days of ultras, or so-and-so ran across the U.S. and probably did that too, you know, in 50 days. Or there's a race where people do 40 miles a day for 50 days. So as I hit those points and I would remember them, I'd be like, yeah, I got past that, you know. So I kind of fueled myself through knowing that I was hitting these marks that people had kept setting for me, because the 22-day world record, it was kind of low, you know, for what I see humans, the potential, and for the amazing things that ultra runners have done. Like people mentioned, running across the U.S., there's so many incredible records out there. And I just kind of wanted this one to hit a level that I felt like was big enough, you know, to be important.
Where does your belief in human potential come from?
I have always felt like anything's possible. And it's easy to get caught up in feeling like certain things aren't possible when you focus on the physical world and kind of what's in front of you. And I like to kind of think about it as though our senses can only take in so much of what's around us, but there's much more going on, you know, not only in the physical world, but probably in some kind of spiritual world as well. So I just like to think that a lot of what we're capable of has been set by the people who come before us and set records. They kind of show us the level of what can be accomplished. And there's so much more, though, in any given record that could be done. And so just kind of knowing that, but then also using people who've come before you as inspiration. You know, records show us what humanity can do to some degree, or what humanity has done. But if they've done that and continued to move it forward, then let's keep going with it. And you just have to know that. I mean, I think I'll kind of switch this a little bit. But when I was a kid, I would watch the Olympics, and it was like the coolest thing ever. I just remember thinking I wanted to be like a gymnast or something. I've never had those skills. But when I got into running and I loved it so much, I would go to track or cross country practice, come home, do hill repeats at my house. I was just so motivated, and I still didn't think that I had the possibility to get into the world of like sponsorships and professional running. But as I got into ultras in my 20s, it was like the world opened up, you know? And so now I work in running, and I've run for different companies. And I think that, you know, sometimes we can't see what's possible, but if we just keep our sights on what we want to be doing and what we're passionate about, the world will open up. Not just, you know, you can set a world record potentially if you want, but you can also find a job in an industry that you're really interested in. You don't have to set limits on yourself in that way either.
It's so funny that you went to what your dreams as a child were, because that's what I was curious about. And that was what was in my head. And the fact that you talk about that, I think part of this record and part of what you've done is you've maintained hope of the childhood dream, and you've maintained an ability to say that it is possible. The childhood dream is the one that has no limits, the one that allows us to do the thing that is unimaginable to our parents or the people who are saying, be realistic. How have you been able to do that?
Well, I realize that, you know, the people, like the heroes that we look up to, the records that are set, all these things, we tend to think of like these people who've done these amazing things as being almost superhuman, but they're just people, you know, like you and me, who have found a path toward that. And they put in out countless, typically, you know, if you're good at something, there's so many hours and so much practice, you cannot see behind the scenes. And like with my record, I've been running for 26 years. So I didn't go set an ultra marathon consecutive days record, you know, having started running 2 years ago. So what people see, when people see something that's great or amazing or incredible, or that they can't even believe, you can guess that that person's probably been doing it for, you know, within practice for so many years. It just, that's the hidden part behind it all.
Yeah. The record that you accomplished is the tip of the iceberg, and everything else, the 25 years of practice, goes unnoticed. And I'm curious, when was the first time you realized you loved running?
Well, I just want to say that is such a beautiful analogy that you just said, because it's so true. You know, it's like you see the record and it's just this little bit coming out of the water and everything else below. I just want to point out that's spot on. That's how it works. But so you said, when did I fall in love with running?
When was the first moment you were like, oh my God, this is my thing?
I loved cross country. I did cross country my sophomore year of high school, and the people who were doing it, we were running trails back behind the school. I was like, yes, this is amazing. And I loved, like, it was so hard, but you would get done and you'd feel so good on these like fast and hard runs. So I think it was probably in high school, but I grew up on a farm, and my siblings and I would just head out onto the trails, either biking or walking. We would run stuff. Like, my parents would take us up to Mount Baker in the summers, and we would hike up the mountain. And then we would abandon my parents and run all the way down the trail in like Keds or something, you know, and or hiking boots. And I remember loving that. We would just kind of race each other down, but we weren't thinking about it as running. And then I would ride horses on the trail and mountain bikes. So realizing that there was a sport that ran on trails cross country, that's definitely what inspired me beyond like having just grown up outdoors.
And did it ever go away, the love?
Not for me. No, I've never stopped loving running. I think that it's such a deep love for me, and it's really the movement. Because if you said today, you know, you can't run any longer, you know, there's something wrong with your leg and the impact is too much, I'd just hop on a bike and do that. So I'm the kind of person who, I'm not necessarily completely attached to the running itself. I love the simplicity though. And I think people in other sports can appreciate that with running, you really don't need much gear. You don't need any special place or location. You could run on anything. So I think running is special for that reason. And that's why I've stuck with it. But give me a paddleboard, give me a bike. I don't care what it is. If it's outside, I'm in.
Yeah. Someone asked you on a different podcast, what are the beliefs that shape your life? And you had one that was so beautiful, which is movement is healing and movement is life. And if you could just break that down for one moment, it's like movement is healing and movement is life. Like there's so much profound wisdom in those seven words.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's something that we often forget when we're in pain. I've had a good deal of pain as an adult, but it's all from like sitting still. So like, it's like my back. And if I sit at a desk too long, I'll get back pain. It gets so intense, you know, that I have a treadmill desk, and I've just kind of tried to change my life around so I'm not sitting a lot. And I would call people and be like walking on the treadmill. They're like, are you on a treadmill? But I've just found, I mean, over and over, it proves to me when I move, I feel really good. And I believe that the body truly is designed to be a moving in space kind of creature. So everything, you know, points to that in my life.
Yeah. Could you break down for me you mentioned before briefly about like the spiritual aspect to what you were doing. And I'm curious, did you feel like you were connecting with God, or like what's your perspective on faith and God after doing this? And is it different from when you started the challenge?
Well, I probably have a somewhat unconventional approach to spirituality and religion, because I have never chosen a certain religion, but I do believe in the general idea of God, something at which to me would be, you know, the thing that connects us all and the power that creates us and that we create with. To me, I think of humanity and everything in the world kind of like you know, aspen groves, they look separate. All the aspen trees are coming up out of the ground, but underneath, all the root systems are connected. So I think that there's, and this, you see this theme through a lot of religions, the interconnectedness of life, and how if you do, you know, be good to others and do unto others as you want done unto you. Because what we do to ourselves, what we do to other people, it has an effect on everything. What we do to others has an effect on ourselves. What we do to ourselves has an effect on others. And I think when you take care of yourself, and you kind of see that interconnectedness and you respect life in that kind of way, and everything within it, and just the way the world works, things will kind of move for you in a positive direction. So I've kind of moved that way in my life. And so, Yeah, I think for me, trying to kind of be of service to others and also to do my best every day in life seems like an important part of being human on this earth.
And what about doing this challenge? Cultivated that belief more or less, or it didn't impact it at all?
I think that it, the fact that I was capable of going for so long and doing so many miles, to me shows an interconnectedness with my environment. And when I would be out running, I would try to kind of remember that I'm connected to everything that's going on, whether if it's a windy day, you know, just seeing, like, being able to see and observe nature and be a part of it. I would say that more than ever in my life, I felt like I was a part of nature, not an observing person. I think sometimes we get in our heads about, like, oh, look what's going on outside or what the animal's doing. You know, there's this step back that we take from actually living life. And what I did is I just jumped into the world and became one of those, you know, like there's a squirrel in the tree and it's grabbing a nut and eating it. And there would be ducks in the springtime with all their little babies out there. You know, they're all a part of nature and we don't think of them as separate. But yet we think of ourselves as separate. But what I was doing felt like such a real part of nature as I was observing all the different changes in the seasons and my own body was changing. It was an incredible connection. Like, the longer I did it, the more I connected. And as I was finishing with the 200s, that was something that was really hard to give up, just going out into nature and living. You know, if the point of life is just living it, that's exactly what I did. I was in the moment. I took each day and each moment in the present. I couldn't get too far ahead of myself or I get anxious or scared or something would hurt more than it should because I'm thinking, where is this going? You know how anxiety causes more pain within your body? Like an actual reaction, it will do that. So for me, I was nature. And I realized like I don't need as much as I think I need in life. Like I don't need material stuff. Like I was so happy just getting out and doing those runs.
How do you transfer that to other people other than just saying it on a podcast?
I think that for me, I was getting to do this thing that I always wanted to do, which is like, I wonder, you know, how cool it would be or like, would I even like running if I could actually do it all day? Like if this was my job, you know, and the answer for me was like, I love it. I actually loved it. And so I think that if people are able to find that thing, and it's not even that you need to find it, you're probably already doing it. To some degree, it's a thing you love doing. If you're able to do more of that, then I think you will find that kind of flow in life that people are looking for. The flow to me is happiness. Happiness and joy can be like really strong emotions, but to feel satisfied in life, I think requires you to be in more of a flow state throughout the day.
Yeah, because it's almost like you became one with the moment by you running. And running were aligned and you were at one with it, which meant you were at one with the flow of life, which allowed you to show up in every moment present. Is that a correct analysis?
Absolutely. No matter the weather, it could be negative 15, it could be 100 degrees. No matter the conditions, if I just showed up where I was at, my body did it. I think our minds create pain within our body to stop us because we don't really want to be doing something or because we're afraid to, a lot of us are afraid to accomplish something big. And that fear and anxiety will cause, oh, I have this pain in my leg. I better stop. You know, if we use excuses all the time to not do things, And we don't realize, we're not consciously admitting to ourselves, oh, this shin pain is my excuse out. Maybe I should stick with it and see what happens. And it's this line. It's almost hard to talk about on something like this because I don't want to encourage people to hurt themselves. But we need to be able to learn how to recognize when pain is resistance to what we're doing versus an actual injury. And there's the mind isn't separate from the body. So to a certain degree, resistance and pain are injury. But my shin pain, I was able to find a solution for it and get it better. And that was because I really wanted to keep going. Whereas if somebody had had enough resistance that they wanted to stop, it would have been their excuse.
It reminds me of when I would make up a sickness when I didn't want to go to school.
Yeah.
And I would actually feel the pain of a stomach ache or a headache or whatever it was, because I was like, this is bad.
Yeah.
What are examples in your own life of you making up excuses because you didn't want to be in that situation?
Oh man. I mean, anytime I've DNF'd a race, I mean, honestly, have I ever had a good reason? No. I've never broken my leg during a race or, you know, nothing that serious. So, I mean, to me, there's race examples that are so obvious because it's like, you know, yeah, I twisted my ankle, but I also had five people pass me and now I'm not where I thought I should be. And I'm allowing myself to lose confidence when I should probably just keep going and see what happens, because you just don't know unless you push through that discomfort. And discomfort might be, oh, I'm not running as fast as I thought I should be for this route. It's not my time goal. Another person passed me. You know, I'm not going to be on the podium. Like, you've already decided and the race is only halfway through. What is this? So I think races is a great example.
Yeah. How do you go about instilling this in your children?
I try to gauge whether it's something that is important to them rather than myself, of course. But I have a good example of my oldest daughter when she went into driving school. We were in Washington State at the time, and you have to go through the driver's school to get your license, you know, when you're 16. So she started the school, and it was really hard for her. And I remember it was harder for her than I remember it being for me. So I knew that, like, it was kind of a struggle. Like, I was the kind of driver who you had to tell me to slow down, you know, and she's the kind of driver who I'd be like, you need to at least go the speed limit, you know, because it's dangerous to go too far under too. So very cautious, like truly a great driver. But her driver teacher, I remember she came back and said that her driver teacher told her that he was like really scared or something. And like it, what he had said to her, I was like, that seems kind of like really discouraging. Maybe he could have said it in a better way. But the point was, like, she was pretty bad at it when she started, and she had a reason to want to stop. And she, her dad, and her both were like, hey, she really wants, you know, to stop. We think we should, you know, maybe she can just learn to drive later. And I go, no, this is something you need to learn. You're already in the class. You've committed to it. You need to finish what you've started. And so I just felt like, I think with everything, you just have to gauge how important this thing is going to be in your child's life. Driving, I think, is one of those things that's very important. I said, you know what? Once you get your license and you're set to drive in that way, you can drive as much or as little as you want. But I said, until you get your license, you need to keep working at it. And then beyond, like, and so she went through the school and she got her license. And, but she failed at one driver test before she did, you know? And so, and now she's, you know, she told me, more recently, like, oh, I'm so glad that, you know, that I continued driving. And she still, for her, it causes a lot of anxiety to drive still. And I think there are a lot of people like that. But yeah, you have to figure out what's important in your life and push through when it's something that's an important life skill, like driving, or, you know, something you're passionate about. Are you scared, excited? Or, you know, are you scared like this is going to kill you kind of thing? It can be a hard balance.
Yeah. It's funny because it seems so unlike you. Like, if I were to imagine your child, I would say, this person is going to go too fast. This person's going to push the limits for what is possible with this vehicle.
Yeah.
And so it's just a good reminder that your child or children could be complete opposites of you in certain arenas. And it's fascinating to me. I don't have a child, but it's the way in which offspring represent parents or the similarities to me is so fascinating. Going back to your childhood, I'm curious, were there any moments from your childhood where if an outside observer was looking at you, maybe from like 12 to 18 years old, they would say, oh, this woman's going to do something special someday?
Oh, that's hard to say. I will say that I've always been very determined. And my mom claims she doesn't say that I was stubborn as much as I remember. But I remember I was the most stubborn person in the room about something I cared about. So like when I wanted something, I would find a way to convince or like push, or I've just always had this like drive, like I've known what I want and I'm not going to let something kind of stop that progression into that if it was important to me. So I think that it's just like a personality trait. Now looking back at myself, I think, oh yeah, that's the kind of trait that you need to push through all the obstacles that would come in your way. Like it's actually a really important trait. And we talk about kids. So I have two daughters. So my oldest is in many ways like the opposite in terms of like, I think that kind of, you know, just putting myself out there, like running fast, driving fast, you know, that style. But she has that determination because, man, when she wants something, I'm like, whoa, it'll suddenly come out, not in like a negative way, but you see that passion and determination. And then my younger daughter is a lot more like me, where I'm like, whoa, slow. She's driving, right? Slow down. Like, you're scaring me. And so, you can have opposites, and it's interesting to see those traits. And knowing now that like the stubbornness, which can be so frustrating to a parent to have a stubborn child, like I know now, see, when I see it in my daughter, I'm like, oh, this is good. You know, like I actually want to kind of encourage this because it's so easy for people in life to try to stop you from or to just discourage you, and a lot of times they don't even mean to. They think they're being realistic, but at the end of the day, what's realistic for one person is not for another.
How did you deal with that quote-unquote realistic expectations that others placed on you?
I just never even cared to pay attention to it. I just like, whatever. I think for me, it's always been easy to see that was somebody else's thing and not mine. I think it's been a little more challenging to deal with like negativity for me. And the way I've kind of found to deal with it is to not engage in it at all. Because if you start to engage, then you end up having to engage longer than if you just ignore. So I try to give attention to what I want to bring into my life rather than give attention to something that brings out negative feelings in me anyway. So that's something like everybody on social media should think about and consider before they post a comment, before they anything. Like, do I want to, is this like going to bring me in a positive direction or negative? Is responding to this really going to help? No. And if it's something negative that somebody says to you, there's no good reason to even respond to it, which is not easy, but it's a good point because you'll end up, they'll say something like, let's say somebody says something negative, you respond. It could be the cleverest response in the world, but they're still going to say something negative again and get you because now you've given them a platform to respond to you.
What's the saying? If you wrestle with pigs, you get dirty too?
Yeah, exactly.
and that must be difficult for someone who is inherently stubborn of like, I'm going to show them I'm right.
But yeah. Well, I've told people this before. I don't know if it comes out as much now, but I've always kind of been a little bit of like, I don't know if this is quite the right term, but a little bit of a fighter in the sense that like, I think that that's just more my nature than to not be a responsive person. And so I have had to kind of learn. But I think that you learn first in managing your own emotions. And once you can really manage your own, if somebody says something to you online or in person that is reactive, you cannot react because you've already learned to deal with that within your own self. So it takes like a lot of internal practice before you can really express it in the world.
Yeah. And one thing that's really helped me do that is imagine the person who is saying something negative as a child. Mm. And it's like, oh, this is a behavior or an action or something I thought when I was 7 or 8 or 10 or 13. And how would I react if myself at 13 is looking at that? Like, and so that's a good way, I feel like, to bring it down to a level, because that's what we really are. We're just children who have grown up to look like adults, but deep down inside, we're all children.
Yeah, it's that reactive kind of, because kids will have that kind of gut reaction, and that's what happens too with a lot of like emotional reactions, you know. And then they learn to kind of deal with it within society as they get older, but kids are kind of like more raw like that. And I think that's kind of what you see online as well, is a more raw level of like emotion. And the more you stay out of that, the less you see of it too, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. And the more that you ascend physically, the more you also ascend mentally, spiritually, and emotionally too. That's what's been so remarkable from just like witnessing your own transformation. Not that I knew you before, but it sounds like you're less reactive in a way that you were before as a result of so much physical work on yourself.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful because again, like we constantly separate mind and body. We say, well, how much is this mental and how much is physical? You know what the truth is? It's 100 of both because there's no difference between your mind and your body. Your mind is part of your body. Now, if we want to talk about the spiritual realm, that's something that we can't necessarily measure yet. And we haven't really found a way to say like, okay, here's this, but it's a part we don't see. But you cannot separate, you know, how you develop your mind and body from each other. And I think that people will find as they get into a practice of developing their body, they'll find that practice of their mind also developing. And that's why exercise in general, whether, you know, just get out and walk or maybe, you know, bike, something like that, get out and do it every day and you'll find that clarity in your whole life.
Do you feel any pressure now that you've accomplished something that no one else has accomplished in the world before, of like carrying the torch for your words and actions having even more meaning than they did perhaps a year ago or 5 years ago, because the ripples of what you say will go out more now? Do you feel that?
I feel a responsibility always. I think not because of this, but just having a large social media following, but not just that. It's really like our words are powerful, and it's important to recognize you know, that level of influence that they have over other people. You know, it's easy to say, oh, so-and-so said a comment that hurt my feelings. But, you know, when you are a leader in your industry or something like that, like your comments can have an even greater effect on people. But I see a lot of responsibility, and I think everybody should feel this way. You can really like make somebody's day just by smiling big at them, you know, as you pass them on a run, something little. And I think that's, if the world needs anything right now, it needs us making these little connections with each other, hopefully like in person, but I know a lot's online. But, you know, I think a lot about how little interaction we have day to day. We run past each other without even looking, all this, like, you know, trying to just pass on a little bit of the joy, you know, or just something positive to people throughout the day, I think would have a huge, enormous effect on the whole world.
What was the smallest interaction that you had over the 200 days that made the most impact on you?
Let's see. There's so many different situations. So I would say more of a general, I was out running so much and so consistently that I started to see the other people that were kind of doing interesting things too. And a lot of them would be walking the same trail with their dogs, or, you know, I think I could see they started to be like, what is this lady doing? You know, like, is this her double day? Or no, I'm still just outside. Like, I've been out the whole time. But I had, I spent a month of the run streak in Tucson in April. And this is where I got a lot of my like heat days, which was kind of cool because having done winter in Colorado, it was like, then I could say I did like more extreme temperatures in Arizona. But I'm running on these bike paths, like totally exposed, 90-100 degree heat. And I saw this guy, he would be biking, and I'm thinking he must like bike commute to work or something. I'm seeing him like every other day or like consistently. And one day we just kind of look at each other like, yeah, you know, whatever you're doing, like, it's cool. Like, whatever you're doing. Yeah. And then the very next day, he rode up and we started talking. And it was like, it was just so interesting to see that when your paths start to cross, and so many of us don't have this in our lives, but it was such a gift. Like, I got to have these connections, these human connections, and actually animal connections too, because I'd see the same animals out. But anyway, so he rides up and we have this whole conversation, and he's like an extreme cyclist who's just bicycling all day, like kind of like what I'm doing. And it was just this crazy, we kind of exchanged like Instagram so we could follow and see what the other person's doing. And he, amazingly, he had made this connection with me the day before I left Tucson. Had he not like turned around and ridden his bike with me that day, I would have been gone. And he probably would have wondered, and so would I, like, oh, I wonder what that guy's story is.
Wow. It's like all these moments and all these, everyone's got their own story. And how often, because of how many people we interact with often, we don't stop and we don't have the care for that story. And we don't ask the question, because I don't want to look bad. I don't want to look stupid in any way. I don't want to put myself in a vulnerable position to make the connection and the other person doesn't want that connection. But every time I've done that, every time I've extended the hand, I've given the nod, it's led to a brighter place for both parties.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is, how do we overcome that resistance of making the connection with another person?
I think seeing the value in it, we're really pack animals. My belief, and our world is becoming just so much less of that community. I'm the kind of person who I really could every day just do my own thing by myself. So like I see that side of it, but as somebody who, doesn't need somebody to run with them, I can go out in the middle of the night and run. I'm not scared. Like I still, like me, this person who can do everything on her own, needs no help. I know how important that connection is. I mean, they say that you live a longer life. People show, like more satisfaction with their lives when they have a community, and community is built from those interactions up. So it's not necessarily about like, oh, I need to make more friends or have a romantic partner that is right for me. Like sometimes it is as simple as like what you're saying. You're out on your run or your bike and you notice somebody and you just stop for a little bit. Life isn't about like getting to that next destination right now, getting that run done. It's that moment you're in, right? If I couldn't have connected with the moment I was in, there's no way I would have run an ultra a day, because it never feels like it's going to end. Each day doesn't feel like it's going to end. And when you're going to 200 days, you have these spans of time where you're like, what did I call them? It was like I was out in the middle of this desert, or like, you know, they say when a sailboat is in the middle of the ocean and there's no breeze, it doesn't matter how great your sail is, you just feel like you're not getting anywhere. Mm-hmm. And you never will. Like that's how so many of the days of the street could have felt, because there were just so many. So I think that, yeah, connecting with people, you'll just know, like if you're out there, you'll know who to say hi to. And I do think it could save somebody's life just by, you know, striking up a conversation with them. There's so many people who are sad and lonely.
You realize that when you have a love for life, a joy, a presence, how important it is to give that in some sense to another human being. Whoa. Because it really is a responsibility. If you're feeling happiness, if you're feeling joy, if you're feeling love for life, like go say hello, make the eye contact and actually take that first step. What on that point about presence, I can only imagine how the presence muscle that you have has increased and expanded over the 200-day streak. If that's accurate, how important did presence play, the role of presence in accomplishing this?
I think it was the single most important thing that I practiced beyond being fit for it or anything like that. Being in the present moment is the greatest practice we can do in order to become a better athlete. Because anything you do, you're going to have that moment where the brain is like, okay, I need to be at the end now, but you have one more minute or one more day or 190 more days. And if you can be right there in the moment, there's almost no reason ever to stop. If you're present, you're present within your body, still being able to keep moving forward. I think by far that's the most important. And this will be an interesting point for people that maybe can't even exercise right now at all. So let's say they have an infant in the house and they're taking care of it full time, or something like that, or they're injured and maybe can't do anything. So the way I actually started really getting into running after high school, I was a stay-at-home mom and I had both my daughters. I couldn't get out and run because I didn't have anybody to help or watch the kids. And it was hard to leave them too, because you're worried, like, oh, will they be okay for 10 minutes, you know? So what I started to practice, I'd read that if you focus on something for like 20 seconds, like completely in your mind, that it's as good as doing it. I said, okay, I'm going to believe that. And I would lay down and, you know, for maybe like a brief minute where one baby wasn't crying or something. And I would lay down. I'd be like, all I need is a 20 second meditation that I'm running. And so I would close my eyes and I would visualize the whole process. I'm getting dressed real quick. And then, you know, I'm going out and I'm running. And when I would visualize it, I would visualize the best possible scenario. I feel great. I'm running fast. And I would get done with the 20 seconds, or maybe I'd get to a minute or two. And I just feel so energized, you know? And then I started dreaming about it. I would wake up and I'd be like, whoa, I dreamed that I just ran all the way to Freeland, which was like 12 miles. I never like run that far, you know? So I was visualizing running way farther than I could ever run. And then I would, you know, my mom would come over, watch the kids, and I would run 6 miles. But I truly feel like those visualizations are still propelling me forward. Wow. And that was, I don't know, like Well, I guess so. My oldest is 18 now, so that was a long time ago. But that take a little bit of time. And again, like, I'm definitely not like a meditation scientist or a visualization scientist, but I really believe in my own experience that, like, even if you can't get out, even if you're injured, or maybe you are running every day, but you'd like to be able to do a lot more, realize that the physical training is important, but you can take a little bit of the mental training time and do the visualization, and know that that's going to get you as far as your run did as well.
Yeah. So that was the visualization to start the whole journey, which is so remarkable that almost like you were laying the foundations. What was the visualization like on the 200-day streak?
I think it was really, you know, it's interesting because I only decided, it was the end of October, and I was like, I should do something cool this winter, you know? And it suddenly popped in my head. So Alyssa, why am I forgetting her last name? But she had just won the Moab 240, and she had run 95 marathons in 95 days in 2020, which kind of kicked off like this incredible, other people started going after that record. But I talked to her after the race, and I don't even remember thinking, oh, that'd be cool to do that. But suddenly after the race, 2 weeks later, I'm like, I think it would be kind of cool to do like a big run streak like that. And so I was looking up Guinness Marathon. I actually applied for the marathon record. And then it popped into my head, I wonder if there's an ultra record. And that's when I went for it. It did exist. And I just decided, well, that's a little more my speed, you know, and went for it.
Wow. And then day to day, the visualizations changed based on the injuries or based on how you were feeling? Like, how did that work?
Oh, exactly? Yeah. So I would say that I had to visualize like a way through everything. And so I stayed really open, like when I had an issue, to possible solutions. And a few times somebody online would be like, hey, have you tried this? And I would try it and boom. So one was a shin pain. Somebody goes, well, you should pick up a towel with your toes every day, this many times a day. That's what you do for shins. And I thought, that sounds weird, but okay. And I couldn't actually pick up a towel with my toes, like I wasn't that skilled, but I did the motion over and over, and I would practice that every day. And I think it actually did. There's something about like with healing injuries, if you can do an exercise that either is strengthening. I'm not telling you don't need to stretch things out per se, but if you can do like an alternate strengthening, so what's weak or what needs to be developed in order for this pain to go away, that seemed to be more powerful than like if I tried to stretch things out, it would just cause more pain.
Yeah, I mean, I can only imagine that what you've done has changed your reactivity to random situations that are unpleasant because of dealing with so many unpleasant situations. What's that been like?
Yeah, I mean, my ability to not react emotionally has grown so much. And actually, if anything, it was worth it just for that, because I feel like being able to kind of regulate your emotions. I don't like to use the word control, because I think that when you feel something, it is important. But you can't always just go down that road of feeling like something that you're feeling is going to last forever, be really important. And I think that that's something that I really embraced during the runs, because there's a lot of, like, one of the overwhelming feelings of doing something big like that every day and getting out at all times of the day, you feel really like insecure. Like there's a within your physical world, because you can't just hang out in the house all day because it's cold out. So the insecurity, like you're looking for things to kind of ground you within that. And that was like that emotion of feeling kind of like I didn't have the level of kind of safety, that I would normally have could have become overwhelming. I remember being out when I'd actually gone to Arizona and I was running one of the runs. I feel like it was like probably 4 a.m. in the morning. I just remember feeling those overwhelming feelings of like, I'm out and it's cold and I just want to lay in my bed and feel like warm and secure. And I just had to be like, keep going. You could do that when you're done with a run. There will be a time. It's okay. Like you got to talk yourself through a little bit, those intense emotions.
It's almost like you become your own therapist.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there cannot be any excuse that's good enough to not keep going.
How did you feel like you became a better therapist at the end of it? And yeah. If so, how?
I think I've always kind of had that ability to understand myself, to maybe even too much self awareness, but that allowed me to kind of file away the things that I didn't have the ability to deal with, the fear, the pain. And I wonder how my sensation of those has changed, because it was a slow burn. And so I often think, like, has my sensation of pain changed? I really believe it has. But there's a story of the man who lifts a calf from the time it's a tiny baby every single day until it becomes a bull. And because he's lifting it every day and it just gets a little bit heavier every day, he builds up into that level of being able to do a lot more than you would ever think. And I think with pain, that's probably something that my sensation of it or my experience of it changed. Some people are very sensitive to pain and some people aren't. So in my 20s, I was a massage therapist. And you learn this working on people is that you can do the lightest of pressure on some people and they're like, ow. And then other people are like, deeper. And you're like using your elbow and putting your foot and like, you know, to the point where you're like, I'm not sure this is okay. So I'm probably on the further end of like, you know, just stomp on me. Like I can't feel it.
From the beginning, or you grew into that?
I think I've always been a lot less sensitive to pain than other people.
And how did your experience as a massage therapist help you in this situation?
Oh, it helped enormously being able to work through injury, because I would have a better sense, like I knew the muscles and kind of what was going on and how I might treat them if it was somebody else. But I treated almost every single thing myself. So I just didn't like want to put the time aside. I probably could have like gone to people or had massage or therapists or stuff like that. But for me, it was like, my extra time outside the runs was so valuable. I'd rather just like, you know, use my thumbs and elbows on myself and try to like work things out. If I could, there's some areas you can't get your own hamstrings, you know? So there's like some areas you can't get, but I have like massage tools that I would kind of try to use. And so I would say that for like the first 3 months, which was kind of a little less than half of, because I went for like 6.5 months, I think total. But there was definitely like ongoing pain. And the way I like to describe it is the pain just moved around, you know, it was pain here and then pain there. It would just kind of have its different manifestations. And to me, that was my own mental resistance, was the pain just moving around and giving me a possible excuse. And then, but I would treat it because it was real. And then, after that, I got into like this like golden time of just being able to run and not have that pain. Like I just felt like a normal runner out there, you know, getting to run a 50K a day. So I didn't run in pain the whole time. I mean, it was definitely a process to get through it, but once I did, it was amazing.
And how long was it until that golden period started, and how long did the golden period last?
Well, the pain really went away after I ran the HURT 100. So I was kind of one of the bigger things that I did during the 200 days is I just decided to do 100 miler because this race is very important to me. I do it year after year. And one thing is I didn't want to like sacrifice other things in my life just to do an ultra a day. So I was like, well, I'm doing the race. Plus that would be like 250Ks out of the way. It's like 350Ks when I normally do two. And it was certainly very difficult, but yeah, I did. After I did that, I was really sore because there's 25,000 feet of climbing. So you really destroy your quads when you've only been running like mostly flat stuff. So I ran flat 50Ks mostly and then did the Hurt 100, 25,000 feet of climbing over, you know, 30 hours. And then next day I had to do a 50K, but like I couldn't even sit in a chair. Like that lowering yourself into a chair, my quads are just totally gone. So the next day was very difficult. And as I worked through that soreness and came out of it, I had the best month ever. So that was in January. And then February was awesome. I don't know how, but like it was amazing. But through the only catch is like through that, I had pelvis pain that lasted until April. So, but other than the pelvis pain, I just felt like $1 million that. So it was somewhere around, and so I started November 5th. So November, December, January. So yeah, 3 months of like, well, 2 months of dealing with pain. And then I went into the Hurt 100 with just like a sore Achilles, I think, at the time, and the pelvis pain. And then after that, just had, yeah. I mean, I would say after that, my body was like, okay, we got this.
And what was the biggest thing in your mind where you're like, this is the reason why I'm going through all the pain?
Curiosity. I wanted to see if there was indeed a wall or if I could keep slamming against it and eventually the bricks would break and I would come out of it one piece, you know? So like, it really was like, it's going to sound weird, but I was so curious. Like I started with curiosity. I wanted to know, is my body capable of this? I had never done that kind of mileage. I think the most I'd ever done was like 130, 140 miles in a week. And I was doing 220 miles a week every single week without a day off. It was crazy. So curiosity it's amazing. I mean, all of the greatest inventions have probably been motivated by a need and a curiosity. And I think that to see that my body could do this and then thrive, it's like, can you do 5 miles a day and thrive? Absolutely. Should you work up to it? Definitely. But I worked up to 200 ultras in 200 days. I've been running for 26 years. So it was probably the perfect next step for me and my curiosity is see like, can ultras be done every day? Because you'll see out there, everybody's got their training tips and running an ultra every day is not smart training. It's way more than you need to do. But it does show us that we can run and that running is potentially good for us when done right. Because there's no way I could have done that kind of mileage if running was bad for the body. There's just no way. There's absolutely, I was feeling better and I was stronger and all my markers, I was getting blood tests. I got an echocardiogram partway through and it showed like a perfectly healthy heart. My heart wasn't oversized. Like I was shocked because I thought like at the very least, I'm going to have an athlete's heart. Nope. Like everything was normal. It was crazy. Wow.
I've always admired curiosity as one of the highest ideals, but I never understood why until you just explained that. And it's because curiosity shows us the potential for the unknown. And it's almost like reaching up to the sky but then what's so fascinating about you is you're curious, but you're also stubborn of like, I'm going to get this done. And I'm curious how I'm going to get this done. And that mix and combination makes for the most remarkable things to actually happen.
Yeah, it does. Because really, I think that maybe curiosity is a spiritual pursuit, even if you think about it, because what we are capable of does speak to, you know, the God element. We are trying to reach our capabilities, or we want to learn where our limits are. And for me, when I got to 100 days, it was like suddenly I realized there wasn't a limit. And that's when I was like, whoa, there's not a limit on this. Okay, when am I going to stop? So if I can go on forever, which is like what it felt like at that point, then I'm going to have to kind of, I got to pick a day, you know, because there's things in my life that I didn't have time for that were important to me. So, you know, I did this during the school year, but I wasn't okay with doing it during the summer when I wanted to be doing things with my kids and my business. But the kids, you know, being like the biggest factor of like, you know, I can get the run done while they're at school. I can get home and make dinner for them and be there for them. I might be a little bit more out of it than usual, more tired, but like, I feel like I'm still, you know, fulfilling my role as a parent. So yeah, once you learn, if you're lucky enough to not find your limit, even when you feel like you're pushing farther than you thought you could go, it's an incredible feeling. I mean, where do you stop? And what injury is good enough to stop? That's the thing I struggle with now. Like, if I can run through everything, then what shouldn't I run through?
And what does that speak for life as it relates outside of running?
Absolutely. It's all, like, that's a great thing about sport, is that you can take it into any realm of your life. And for most of us, all these other aspects are really important. You know, for me, business has always been as important, kind of building that and hopefully leaving, you know, something significant for my children, whether, you know, in some legacy or another, like that has always been really important to me. And I think I can take every lesson, you know, that plays to sport and also play it out into those other areas of my life.
Yeah. You are a shining example of what an incredible human looks like when they reach for the unknown. And I'm so grateful for your presence, not only in this world, but also on this podcast. And I appreciate you so much for sharing the wisdom that you have. I like to end these podcasts by asking the guests for a challenge. A challenge points to the place in your heart you believe the audience or someone listening should take this conversation to do something in their day-to-day life. After 200 ultras in 200 days, I'm guessing that you've thought about how to challenge people to live a better life. Does a challenge come to mind?
It does. Yeah. I think, can I give two?
Absolutely. You can give as many as you'd like. You can give 200.
I would like to give two, because one thing I think that can change your life is to start actually doing the things that you promised to yourself that you said you would do. How many of us, like, oh, I'm going to go to bed earlier tonight. I'm going to exercise tomorrow. I'm going to, you know, tell the people I love that I love them. You know, these things. So, you know, right now you're listening, you're going to procrastinate later, write down those promises that are important to you. And for the next week, hold every one of those promises and be good for it, because these aren't just for other people. But if we can't trust ourselves to complete these important things in our lives, then we don't have a stable ground to stand on. So if we can write down these things right now, and decide what's important to you. And you could even expand it to the point of like, what kind of principles are important to me in my life that I'm going to live by? It's too easy to go day through day through day and not live up to the things that we hold important. So we have to like hold ourselves to them. So that would be my first thing. So just for a week, hold yourself to those important promises, but you need to write them down so that you'll be good for that. And the other thing I would say is whatever sport you're in for the next week as well, do a streak. So in running, a streak is just doing the same thing every day. It can be any amount. So if you love biking, you could promise yourself you're going to bike for 2 miles a day minimum. And then you'll find the cool thing about a streak is you'll find yourself doing, you get out there and you're like, I'm having so much fun. And you do like two is your minimum, but you go out for 20, you know, or I mean, that's me anyway. But I find so much joy in getting out in nature. And so I've been doing a run streak since I finished where I do a minimum of 5 miles a day. So I might bike too, but I still have to do my 5 miles running. So that's my challenge to all of you, my two challenges.
I love those so much. And I love the point about writing down your principles and writing down what is you actually value, because it takes it from an idea in your head to something you actually have to look at and say, are my actions following this when it's outside of my head? So I love that so much.
And when you have a difficult decision to make, what's so great about having those written down is you can say, okay, I'm trying to decide if I'm going to change jobs, for example. Then you can look at your principles and see if this change, this big thing that you're doing, is going to fit within those things you decide are important to you. And that's huge. I mean, we can get caught in like the decision paralysis, you know, but when we know and we have a sense of like what's important to us, then it's much easier to move forward and like actually go toward that goal that we have in our heads for ourselves. Life goes way too fast to not know what direction you're going.
Yeah. And also, you can make a decision to go in a new direction 2 weeks from now or today that could completely alter the course of your life, right? You didn't know, you didn't have this as a vision when you started last year. I'm going to run 200 and 200. Like, it just wasn't a possibility in your head. But 2 weeks before, you got inspired and you're like, all right, like, I might as well do this. And so that gives somebody a hope and appreciation for like, just go for it. If you see someone that inspires you, there's a reason for that. And yeah, so,
yeah, just going for something is so huge. And I think I rarely overthink something like that. There's plenty of other things. Like if I'm trying to buy something, I might overthink which one to buy. But like just going for a goal, like even if you end up failing, it gives you like this incredible experience to have either way is, yeah, that, I mean, that's a powerful thing to do.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time and your wisdom. I'm so grateful for it all. And where can we send people to connect with you further?
Well, I have a website and I'm on probably all the social medias, but I have a website, CandiceBurt.com, that kind of has, I update a little bit less, but I do like longer form writing if people like to read a little bit more, or if they want like daily updates, I'm always doing stories about whatever I'm doing on Instagram. So on Instagram, it's Run Candace Run. And then on Facebook or Twitter, you can find me at Candace Burt, or Twitter's Run Candace. So some version of Run Candace or Candace Burt. You'll find me. You just Google me.
And that's all linked down below. So thank you so much, Candace. I really appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was so much fun.